From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump finds himself at the center of an increasingly crisis-driven White House. His personal lawyers being investigated, his staff turnover is unprecedented, his party's House Speaker is retiring, his tweets are ever more belligerent, his lies keep piling up, and his policy contradictions are beyond embarrassing. Meanwhile, Americans who were told that Trump was going to look out for the little guy continue to struggle. Such a crisis situation offers room to organize and mobilize from the left. But is that happening? And if so, how? My guest is Arun Gupta, an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. He's also author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, and he is a regular news correspondent for this program. Welcome back to the show, Arun.
Great to be with you today, Sonali.
So one of the most direct examples that we see of people organizing specifically around this crisis in the White House is that MoveOn.org has mobilized thousands of people who promised that they're going to show up in the streets if Trump fires special counsel Robert Mueller. What do you make of this? And is it going to be is it something worth putting one's effort into?
I don't really see how it's going to be that significant. In February of 2003, you had these absolutely massive demonstrations against the impending Iraq war. Tens of millions of people, not just in the U.S. and around the world, and it did not stop the Iraq war. You actually have to disrupt the system for it to have an effect. I think the only saving grace at this point seems to be is the raid on Michael Cohen's office, Trump's lawyer, that information now is likely not to just be shared with Mueller's team, but the Manhattan District Attorney, the New York State Attorney General. So there's now officials who can prosecute Trump who are beyond his reach. So I think that makes it a lot less likely that he's going to fire Mueller and Rothstein, the deputy attorney general overseeing the investigation.
Is this a moment that you think the left really does have an opening on? We're seeing a crisis, not just of government, but specifically, it seems, the kind of conservatism that the Republican Party has been promoting for years now, with Paul Ryan saying he's no longer going to run from office. It really does seem as though it's not just Trump in crisis, but everything that has led to Trump.
Yeah, that's true. You know, this is not Paul Ryan's party anymore. Of course, he was not Paul Ryan was not the intellectual he was made out to be, the good government trying to get deficits under control. We just saw him oversee this debt busting budget that's going to add $1 trillion or more to the debt over its national debt over its lifetime. But at the same time, he did represent the interests, certainly, of corporations, the 1%, like the Koch brothers. And Donald Trump is, if he has an ideology, it's white nationalism, really. And that runs counter to a certain conservatism within the Republican Party, because they realize that they do depend on immigrant labor. They want free trade, the free flow of goods and capital. And so that is threatened by Trump's America First appeal. So in the case of Ryan, you know, I think his day is past, but it's hard. The problem is it's hard to see how to organize against this when you have the left and even the liberal forces and organized labor in such disarray. What we're seeing is kind of some dramatic stuff, but it tends to be more piecemeal. A year ago, we were seeing much more direct demonstrations against Trump, like the demonstrations against the ban on Muslim majority countries, the women's marches, the organizing to defend immigrants. And a lot of that has really subsided. And now you kind of see more, I think, what you can call like secondary protests, important, but not against Trump per se.
Now, you mentioned organized labor is in disarray. However, teachers in state after state, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Arizona, have been organizing. I mean, they've been pushed into such a corner that one wonders why it didn't happen before. And we just got the news, by the way, that the Arizona governor has agreed to a 20% pay hike for teachers there. West Virginia teachers won, a significant victory. How do you put this within the context of organized labor as it has been? Is this organizing kind of happening in spite of the traditional organized labor?
Well, certainly so. You know, the teacher strike that really kicked this off was in West Virginia, and it happened outside of organized labor. The teachers' unions were almost non-existent. This went around them. It's kind of technical. A lot of people called it a wildcat strike, but it wasn't, because a wildcat strike is in defiance of the unions. And there the unions basically had no control, presence whatsoever, except on paper. And then you see the same thing going on in Arizona, where teachers are saying that they don't put much faith in the unions because they've been pretty much non-existent. And so, it is very much a bright spot that teachers are organizing, but there is a question of how far is it going to ultimately go without being able to coordinate it nationwide. This is kind of teachers are rising up in some of the just absolute worst conditions. You have states where you could have teachers who've been on the job 10, 15 years, and they're making under $40,000 a year. They're carrying these huge student debts. Schools have been massively underfunded. Someplace like Oklahoma, I think the cuts to education since the Great Recession have been something like close to 30% of the budget. Meanwhile, they've been all these huge tax giveaways. So you're seeing public education decimated. And that's a situation. And it's great to see, the teachers on the move. And it is one of the, few bright spots. But at the same time, you have the Supreme Court decision that's going to be coming down in the next couple of months, the Janus decision that's going to basically turn the public sector into right to work, meaning it's going to really gut a lot of the unions. It's not a coincidence that these four states are right to work. But if you want to see what right to work looks like, look at Wisconsin, which has lost over 50% of its union members since Governor Scott Walker gutted right to work there back in 2011.
Now, Arun, when you have a cornered president like the way in which Trump is, not that we see this very often, but the danger is that, of course, the president will pivot to issues that rally support, public support behind him. One of the things that he's done routinely right from the start, of course, has been to demonize immigrants. That's been a very useful scapegoat for him. And now the reports of a chemical attack in Syria have seem to be an opportunity for him to wage a war. War can tend to be, or I should say expand an existing war. War tends to be a great way for a president to rally public support around him so that they're distracted away from the things that he faces personally. There is some organizing around the left against a war in Syria, but the left seems to be caught up in the issue of whether the chemical attack in Douma was really by the Syrian government or not. And it just seems to be very fractured on this issue.
Yeah, I mean, the left has not acquitted itself well on the Syria issue. I mean, it's I don't pay a lot of attention to social media because I think organizing happens in the real world. But you see really a lot of left-wing figures just tearing each other apart over the question of whom to support and oppose in Syria. And you just have really a lot of kind of reprehensible support for the Assad regime coming from certain sectors of the left. Of course, I don't think you can call anyone who supports a butcher like Bashar Assad as being on the left, as being someone who fights for liberation and freedom anymore. But the result is that you don't have much good organizing. You know, my understanding is the one kind of main anti-war group, United National Anti-War Coalition, that they're split on this question. Some of the groups in the coalition are pro-Assad, and others, you know, I think have a much more sensible position of being like, you know, we're with the Syrian people. But that has essentially prevented them from being able to organize meaningfully around the issue. And I think also people to a certain degree feel, a lot of people feel kind of defeated because we had during the Iraq War, you know, from 2003 to 2007, you saw these massive marches of hundreds of thousands of people, sometimes well over 500,000 people, yet it didn't stop the war. It did turn popular opinion against the war, but the U.S. is still involved in the conflict, which has, you know, spread throughout most of the Middle East now, and the situation is worse than ever. So it's really not one of the bright spots of the last 15 years.
There have been some piecemeal organizing efforts, as you noted earlier. We just covered on our program the Poor People's Campaign, which is gearing up, has been gearing up for a few months now, and then next month is going to launch 40 Days of Action. Very interesting campaign that links issues of poverty to race, immigration, militarism, etc. And it certainly remains to be seen if that'll help usher in a sort of broad based mobilization of the kind that happens off of social media and actually in the streets. But from a broader perspective, Arun, isn't now the perfect time for the left to mobilize, even more so than around the election and right after the election? The Republican Party is weak. The Democrats are strong in as much as the progressive wing seems to be gaining some strength with some progressive forces running for office and, you know, Bernie Sanders remaining strong. It seems as though the sort of neoliberal capitalist ideology is at its weakest right now. Isn't now the time to strike if one sort of uses a war strategy mentality?
I completely agree, Sonali. I think one of the bright spots of late has been Black Lives Matter and the demonstrations in Sacramento over the killing of Stephon Clark. And that's where, you know, you see the disruptive strategy. What really made the issue national was a few days later, activists blocked the basketball arena and prevented fans from going inside. And, you know, we also know that Black Lives Matter would, activists and groups would often take to roadways and highways. And that wasn't just a tactical choice because historically highways have been used to decimate Black communities. You know, when decisions are made where to build the highways, it often involves massive displacements of African American and Latino communities. In New York City, for example, over 50,000 people were displaced by the Cross Bronx Expressway when it was built. And you see this pattern repeat all over the country. But there has to be a strategy that is mass-based, you know, where you are turning out thousands of people, where you have a clear focus, as Black Lives Matter does, and that you are disrupting the working of the system in some way. Peaceful protest can be useful to mobilize people, to give them a sense of their own power, but it's not raising the cost to the system. And ultimately, to be able to change the state's action, to change a government's action, mm-hmm. you have to be able to raise the cost.
Arun, it's one thing to try to mobilize people against conservatism, Republican Party, Trump, etc. Another thing to also sort of rally support among one another. I'm wondering whether you see the importance in what the teacher strikes have accomplished in terms of how they are viewed by the rest of America. I mean, there was far too significant a group of Americans elected Donald Trump. And the country itself still feels polarized. And if the left can succeed in anything, shouldn't it be to try to rally a majority of Americans into seeing that it's legitimate to demand a strong social safety net, to demand higher minimum wages, that sort of public organizing among one another so that we rally around what we want rather than what we're against can be really critical?
I think that's completely true. It's a question of who's going to lead this. You know, we did have Moral Mondays that began in North Carolina, that started to hook up with the low wage workers campaign, the Fight for 15, around organizing fast food workers. But fast food campaign was organized by the Service Employees International Union. They were pouring tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into it since 2011, essentially. But the latest reports show that SEIU has cut funding dramatically to the fast food workers campaign. They're reorienting towards elections. I mean, this is a thing that we were talking about in late 2016 that we were trying to warn people about, that when you have a Republican in the White House, what happens is you get partisan movements, that all this energy pours into the elections because people want to oust the bad guys in office. It's a partisan movement. When you have a Democrat in the White House, you get anti-systemic movements, because then far more people realize that, oh, wait, the Democrat is doing bad stuff also. It's the whole system is the problem. So, with Clinton, you had the anti-globalization and environmental movements. With Obama, you had Occupy Wall Street, you had Dreamers, climate justice movement, Black Lives Matters, the low-wage workers campaign. And right now, all those are on the defensive, some very much so. You know, the immigrant rights movement is really just been battered. The government, the Trump administration strategy is to deliberately sow terror. That's what they're talking about. They're like, we're extending the border. Technically, right now, the border exists 100 miles into the U.S., and they're saying we're extending the border to all the U.S., to where raids could happen anywhere. That, the officials are saying we want those undocumented immigrants to be looking over their shoulder in fear. So it's a pretty uneven terrain, out there. I don't have any magic solutions, or I don't think there's a magic wand that we can wave. We have to look for opportunities. Personally, I think also the March for Our Lives, the pro-gun control demonstrations are a bit of a source of hope. I know a lot of people are attacking them, the kids and the movement, because they've gotten a lot of support from prominent Democratic Party activists, because Michael Bloomberg has been pouring a lot of money into this movement. But guns are really one of the biggest public health dangers in this country. But on top of that, from my reporting across the U.S., I would argue also that the left should be trying to demilitarize society at all levels, that it needs to demilitarize the population and it needs to demilitarize the police. The two go hand in hand, because what happens when you see these mass shootings, you see popular support for heavily militarized police. And so the only way to get out of this mess is to demilitarize both at the same time, to start to take away all these weapons of wars from civilians and institute like strong sweeping gun control while also taking away all the military toys or the police. That's how we start to move to a society that isn't based so much on fear and violence.
Well, Arun, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Arun Gupta. He's an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications. He's also the author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, and a regular news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. We've been discussing left organizing during this moment of crisis in government. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.